Today is day 9 of the Derek Chauvin trial for murder in the death of George Floyd. Have you been watching? If so, have you been feeling unsettled? A video showing a white policeman's knee on a black man's neck as that man dies. A Greek chorus of bystanders having to control growing rage and despair. Then, as witnesses during the trial, weeping at the helplessness they felt. Well, our next guest says felt is the operative word there, that this is trauma felt at the cellular level, that it then moves in and lives there. And if you are black and brown, it joins a community of past traumas, a physical manifestation of racism that we're only beginning to acknowledge. Rezma Menakem is a Minneapolis-born and raised author and therapist whose work centers around racialized trauma, explaining it, healing it. His book is My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies. Over the last year, he's worked with the Minneapolis Police Department, as well as that city's public health department. So, Rezma Menakem, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, my pastor, Reverend Dan, of First Congregational, mm-hmm. Cambridge, used your work as the centerpiece of his Easter Sunday sermon. You know, Easter is so much about the body, the metaphor for some of the body risen. Your work is about the body held down. Talk about that.
Well, it is about the body held down, but it is also about the body rising, right? It's about how do we connect with the creative resource that is inside of all of us that is connected to creation itself. And so part of what happens when we go through something like this is that it doesn't just affect the person that that has been brutalized, that has been murdered, that has been hung, that has been lynched. It also affects those that are left, those that are in that person's community. The purpose of doing something like what Derek Chauvin did on camera is to not create terror in the person that he was murdering, but also create terror in the community that was left. This is a long historical trope of murdering black bodies and indigenous bodies and then leaving them in the public in order to instill racialized terror and trauma.
And by the way, this idea of trauma being passed down, maybe even unspoken, but somehow passed down,
yep.
It affects different populations. I mean, children of Holocaust
exactly right.
survivors, you know, but we're talking about black and brown here because in Minneapolis, there's been so much trauma. Philando Castile, who told police he was carrying a gun legally, he was shot and killed inside his car. There were other shootings, of course, George Floyd. So what are you seeing in the people, in the bodies in Minneapolis?
Yeah, people are trying not to watch a lot of it. They're watching chunks or pieces of it, which I really suggest to do. People are reaching out to one another. They are trying to gather what I call wailing homes, places where as this stuff starts to pour out, there's places where people can go and rock and be with each other. And because when this stuff happens, it is not just happening in terms of just the George Floyd case. There is also the historical energy that never got reprieve or dealt with. There's the intergenerational, there's the persistent institutional, and then our own personal pieces all get combined in together. And we have this sense of overwhelm and this sense of dread and this sense of communal overwhelm and dread.
Well, look, this is some of the work that you're doing with the Minneapolis Health Department. You've also in the past worked with police officers. And by the way, you come from a family of police officers. And you tell a story of one officer, happened to be a white one, who walked up to you and ended up with tears in his eyes. What did you learn about trauma and police officers?
Police officers come from a society. They come from the same society I come from, right? So there are certain things that are embedded in a society with regard to policing black bodies, policing indigenous bodies. And so one of the things that I realized is that they are very rarely educated on the impact of secondary trauma and vicarious trauma. And so there is no infrastructure in the policing departments across the country that actually puts a eye on that, that says early on that we know that our police officers are going to be traumatized because this is a traumatizing structure. So what we're going to do is not just put a gun on their hip and train them, but we're actually going to get them to begin to learn about how to explore and lean into their bodies. And we're going to create an infrastructure by which the sergeants and the lieutenants and the people in command's job is to regularly check on their people, specifically for trauma, specifically around racialized trauma, and specifically around secondary and vicarious trauma. That does not happen right now.
Well, and this officer, you know, his eyes started tearing up when he was just tight as a coil and filled with rage, and he thought something was wrong with him. And, he said to you, nobody's ever said to me that this could happen to me.
Right.
He thought something was wrong with him.
Mm-hmm. A rage is anger that has aged. And many times when that anger gets aged, people lose the plot line. They don't have a sense of where it came from. So they actually act it out on people that they love or people that they serve.
Well, and, you know, this idea of this sense of trauma being passed down through generations, we rarely talk about it, but it's somewhere in the DNA that people know that American policing was born during slavery. Groups of men used to track down runaway slaves. And then after slavery, police looked the other way at lynchings or worse, were members of the Klan. I mean, this is what you're talking about. It's all like in our cells. I encourage people to read My Grandmother's Hands. But in the meantime, what would you tell them now? We're in a trial and there's going to be a verdict. How else can people reduce or maybe they don't want to reduce it, somehow do something with this thing that's happening to their bodies?
So the thing that's happening to your body, to our bodies, is actually, like you've been saying, is actually a pass down, right? It's what we learn not from instruction from what our parents do or don't do. It's what we learn from what our parents and our parents' parents recoiled from and leaned into. And so to deal with that type of stuff, one of the things I say is that we got to make time to reach out and check and talk with people. One of the things I always say is, check on your strong family members, check on your strong friends, because this stuff is communal. And maybe you may think that they're all right and they're the people that everybody goes to, but they're the people that's struggling. We have to realize that this thing may actually have anniversary remembrance to it. So the person that is struggling with it, that may not be struggling with this right now, but a year from now, when the anniversary of the verdict comes up, the fact that they didn't have what they needed to have in order to stop this murder from happening, those things have anniversaries to them for like 1 to 3 years, and some for some people 10, 20 years. There is a tail to it. There is a remembrance to it. We want to be able to help our people, not just now, but later on down the line.
Well, Rezma Menakem, I'm sure you're working with the city to prepare for a not guilty verdict. You say you've used the word murder, but of course the jury is going to decide that. What are you in the city thinking?
Yeah. So I've been talking with a lot of people, and the thing for me is that whether or not the jury comes back with a just verdict, we know what we saw. In an embodied sense, we know what we experienced. So what I saw was a modern day lynching. And what I've been doing, and what a lot of people in my community, other healers in my community have been doing, is preparing for that, is creating, figuring out how do we create ways to address that? How do we come together? How do we open up our homes? How do we create workshops online? How do we do things? How do we write? How do we begin to do this now? So as this verdict comes out, whatever it is, we have some preparation for the amount of historical, intergenerational, persistent institutional and personal pain and terror and horror that's going to be sparked up, whatever the case. Whatever happens, there's going to be a lot of pain that comes through this.
And you're saying there has to be a way to release it structured by people like you?
People like me or the grandmother who sees the pain in her baby's eyes and says, come here, let me rock with you.
That's therapist and author Rezma Menakem talking about racialized trauma, which he says all Americans are suffering, but particularly people of color, and especially at this time. Rezma, thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate this.